from KQED.
And welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer in today for Mina Kim. And for the rest of the hour, we're talking about the extraordinary powers Governor Newsom is using, granted by the Emergency Services Act, to combat COVID-19. The governor has issued dozens of executive orders shutting down businesses that he's deemed not essential, prohibiting in-person church services, suspending the ban on single-use grocery bags, ordering the Secretary of State to send every registered voter in California a mail-in ballot for the November election, to name just a few things that he's done. Legislators also agreed to give Governor Newsom unrestricted access to more than $1 billion in mid-March to combat the coronavirus pandemic before leaving town. And now that they're back in Sacramento, some of them, including some Democrats, are complaining that their oversight role is being suspended as well. Joining us to talk about Governor Newsom's use of executive authority is Dan Schnur. He teaches at the Annenberg School of Communications at USC and UC Berkeley. He also worked with Governor Pete Wilson during the 1990s, a fact that is relevant to this discussion as well. Dan Schnur, welcome.
Scott, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, let's begin by, big picture. What is your take on how the governor is using this authority during this pandemic? Appropriate overreach? What do you see?
Well, Scott, you've heard the old expression that democracy is the least efficient form of government.
Except for all the others.
I'm sorry?
Except for all the others.
Precisely. But particularly in a time of emergency, that inefficiency can become critical, and even a life or death situation. So immediately after the pandemic hit with to the level and the force that it did, it's clear that the governor is granted these powers, as you mentioned, under the California Constitution, and did act appropriately, as his predecessors of both parties have, in exercising powers in those unusual circumstances without the legislature. The California Constitution, though, unlike many other states, does not specify a time duration for the emergency. And it's very clear that state legislators of both parties, both Republicans and Newsom's own Democratic allies, have been getting increasingly frustrated because they feel like he's pushed those powers too far, not just for same day or same week decisions, but for decisions that would have very significant consequences for many months or years to come.
What's an example of that kind of order that he's issued?
Okay. So, for example, in late March, when the governor called for a shutdown for the stay-at-home orders that he issued, it would have been impossible to recall the California state legislature and ask both the Assembly and Senate to vote on whether or not those steps ought to be taken. That's exactly the kind of thing that the emergency powers were designed to grant. And even today, or even this week, on a day-to-day basis, the governor is making decisions about which counties can reopen retail, can reopen restaurants, can allow for haircuts and hair salons to open. The idea that a legislature would be voting on that is problematic as well. On the other hand, some of the pushbacks, particularly on budgetary matters, probably do require the involvement of the legislature. And also, and I know, Scott, you have talked about this in the past, the governor's decisions on procurement, on how to acquire emergency supplies and equipment to provide for our healthcare and emergency workers, are the types of things that legislators are becoming increasingly confrontational about because they're not being consulted.
And we're expecting to hear from one of those legislators, Phil Ting, a state assemblyman from San Francisco. He chairs the budget committee in the assembly. We'll be hearing from him shortly, I believe. And Dan, as I mentioned at the top, you worked for Governor Pete Wilson in the 1990s. To what extent did he use this power for things like the Northridge earthquake or wildfires, that kind of thing?
Well, when I worked for the governor, probably the most extreme use of these powers, although he used them several times during fires in the Oakland Hills and elsewhere around the state for any number of natural disasters, the most extreme use of those powers that I recall during my time with him was in the immediate aftermath of the Rodney King riots in Los Angeles after a jury in Simi Valley acquitted the police officers who'd been accused of their actions against Mr. King. I was working on the governor's reelection campaign when the Northridge earthquake hit, and he's just employed emergency powers at that time as well. But Governor Davis, Governor Schwarzenegger, and Governor Brown, all at different points in their tenures, took similar steps. But the big difference, of course, Scott, is in every single one of those instances, even the Northridge earthquake, even going back a little bit further, Loma Prieta, there was a defined period of time in which the emergency existed before the rebuilding effort became more central. That's less clear in a pandemic. And so to be fair to the Governor Newsom, the lines are a little bit murkier here.
But yeah, and in the same vein, unlike, say, the Rodney King situation or an earthquake or the Oakland Hills fire, those were very concentrated in a particular place, whereas the pandemic obviously affects the entire state and the economy and voting and all those things.
Well, that's right. And the dividing line between emergency and urgent decision-making and decision-making, on the other hand, that is simply easier to make more quickly and without legislative consultation is a murky one. The one other point that's worth considering here, Scott, that the governor's advisors have brought up, particularly when it comes to the large-scale procurement of medical supplies, is they've argued several times that because the negotiations and the contracts are so intricate, it would compromise public safety by compromising the contracts to share the details of those deals with the legislature. And Mr. Ting and many of his colleagues have responded with understandable outrage to that. I think, if you will, there's actually a really good example in Washington, D.C., at least before this current administration, that walked a similar line, not so much on procurement issues, but on national security issues, when presidents of both parties were concerned about sharing very intricate details of national security matters with 535 members of the U.S. House and Senate. What they've done in Washington is Congress has set up what's called a Gang of Eight, with the four leaders of the caucuses, the Speaker, the President Pro Tem, and the two minority leaders, and then the chairs of both the House and the Senate Intelligence Committee and the ranking minority members. And so those eight individuals are consulted with by the White House, even on very tricky and very and often very secret national security measures. I wonder if the governor and legislative leaders could set up a similar entity here in California that would allow the governor to consult with a very small group of legislative leaders to respect their authority and the balance of powers without either slowing things down unnecessarily or compromising sensitive information.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I'm going to ask our next guest in just a moment, but let me give out the phone number if you want to join us. We're talking about the governor's use of emergency powers during this pandemic with Dan Schnur, who teaches politics and communication at USC and UC Berkeley. The number is 866-733-6786. Again, it's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or you can email us. It's forum@kqed.org. Joining us now is Democratic Assembly Member Phil Ting from San Francisco. He chairs the Assembly Budget Committee. And Assemblyman Ting, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Scott. Really appreciate it.
Well, you were quoted about a week ago, and I actually asked the governor about your comments, and I don't want to take them out of context, but tell me, you know, you were talking about the duration of this Emergency Services Act and the fact that it doesn't seem to have an end. And tell me how you and your colleagues in the legislature are feeling right now about the role that you have in this pandemic in oversight of things like procurement, as well as in the budget and the allocation of funds for this emergency situation.
Well, thanks for the question, Scott. First, let me just start off. I think the governor and his team, Secretary Ghali, Dr. Angel, have done a phenomenal job during this pandemic. I mean, you can just see the results because we sheltered early. We asked people to stay home. We have one of the lower per capita infection rates across the entire country. And so it's, you know, kudos to the leadership team for doing that. I think the challenging part, and I think Dan was really articulating it well, is there needs to be some greater communication with the legislature. There was a sense that when we were in recess, and again, recess doesn't mean we weren't working. We were just merely working in our districts and very focused on our constituents, and it was a constant communication with all the people we represent. But it was a lack of communication between the legislature and the governor's office in terms of really what was going on. And we know in an emergency, you can't have over communication with every legislator. I think Dan's point was really well taken. However, we've seen in previous emergencies that were a little more focused, you have the legislative leaders for the districts that were they represented that were impacted were in constant communication. So if you had the fires in Sonoma, you had the Sonoma legislative leaders, and last year we had that awful disaster in Paradise. You had their legislators who again are represented by the Republican Party, so they're not in the majority, but there was constant communication, very good communication with all the legislators. I think that's was the overall feeling we thought was missing. It was challenging to get information and challenging to understand what was going on. So now that we're sort of in this new phase, I like to call it life in the time of coronavirus, we need to figure out how we are going to function as a state government to continue to have this public process, this transparency, but also allow the governor enough runway so that he can continue to run the state during an emergency.
Well, that $1.1 billion the legislature allocated in March before you returned to your districts was really was a unanimous vote. There was no opposition, and it was basically a blank check is maybe a little too loose, but, it was he basically said, spend it the way you need to. And he used it, by and large, to procure PPEs and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But now he's come back to the legislature and asked for another $3 billion with, again, very unfettered. And Holly Mitchell, the chair, your counterpart in the Senate, the chair of the Budget Committee there, seemed a little incredulous about that. I mean, is he overreaching in that regard?
Well, I think we're going to have greater definition as to what that money's for, have a better understanding of what he plans to use it for. They clearly have some idea. I don't think the number, it wasn't like a round number like $3 billion. It was like $3.6 billion, I think it was, $3.3 billion. So there's a specific number. So they clearly have a spreadsheet of items that they put on it that they're planning on spending. I think it's really important to have a better understanding of where that money's going to go to and have some public process as to, even as it's getting spent, having some public process around it. I think we understand that they were working feverishly to procure PPE, and I totally understand they had to move very, very quickly. But you can see that because there was a lack of transparency, there was some challenges that we need to go back and take a look at.
We're talking about the extraordinary use of emergency powers by Governor Newsom to affect everything from going to church and which businesses can be open, whether you have to wear a mask or not, whether you can go to the beach, and how you're going to vote in November. We're talking with Dan Schnur, professor at the Annenberg School of Communications at USC and UC Berkeley, also Democratic Assemblyman Phil Ting, who chairs the Assembly Budget Committee. If you'd like to join us for your thoughts on how the governor's handling the pandemic and whether you think he's overreaching or not, give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786, or you can get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum. Phil Ting, I know you have limited time to stay with us, so let me just ask you, as Dan mentioned at the top, California is one of the I don't know if it's one of the few states, but we do not, like, unlike other states, we don't have a sunset on these emergency powers. Maybe the middle of a pandemic is not the time to talk about that, but at some point, do you think that's worth bringing up?
Well, I think the emergency powers really didn't envision a pandemic, right? We thought of it as a wildfires, an earthquake, a specific region that was going to be impacted, a specific time frame. Now we have the entire state being impacted, and we have an indefinite time frame. So I think we definitely need to take a look at how we operate in an emergency, in a pandemic that affects everybody. It's not just one segment. So I think those are something that's going to be part of our budget discussions in terms of really trying to get a better understanding of how we operate as a state. I think we saw what the last 2 months were like. I thought we did overall a good job, but I think we can do better. And I think that's the idea that we have going into this budget discussion.
So are you saying then that some sort of an understanding of when these emergency powers end will be part of the budget or the trailer bills or something like that?
It's hard to say when things will end, because that's really got to be based on science and the particular situation. I think what we want to try to have an understanding is how we are going to operate during this pandemic, which is a different type of emergency than, say, a wildfire or an earthquake.
Yeah. And Dan Schnur, when you were with Governor Wilson and he used this, what did it enable him to do in the specific circumstances that he was using them that he wouldn't have been able to done or wouldn't have been able to do so quickly?
I'll give you two quick examples, Scott. One from the King riots and one from the Northridge earthquake. On the King riots, in a real time way, like tragically we're seeing in Minneapolis right now, a governor needs the authority, to call out the National Guard, to order them into very specific circumstances, to take the types of things to make a community safe that a legislature simply could not act on an immediate basis. Now, Mr. Ting makes a really important point. Even during circumstances like that, earthquakes, riots, fires, whatever it happened to be, there's always an effort to communicate not just with legislative leadership, but even more importantly, with the legislators representing those communities so that they'd understand what the state was doing in order to try to come to the assistance of their constituents. Northridge is the aftermath of the earthquake, and I think Loma Prieta would be as well, although that was before my time, is Governor Wilson suspended competitive bidding processes in order to reopen Interstate 10, the main traffic artery in Southern California, much more quickly than would have been done otherwise. And because he suspended that competitive bid process and also did not have the legislature vote, he unilaterally agreed to commit to a sizable bonus to the construction firm working on the highway. The interstate was able to reopen within 90 days.
And there was pushback, as I recall, from unions, right? Because there was, I think that wasn't a union company. Is that correct?
That's precisely right. But his argument at that time, and for those who watched the argument going on over the Embarcadero and Bay Bridge, for years, if not decades, he argued that the emergency of reestablishing commerce and other types of travel throughout the Southland did justify the emergency declaration. But even in those circumstances, it was the type of thing on which he worked very closely and communicated very closely with legislators representing the affected areas.
Yeah. Let me just, I know we have to say goodbye to you, Phil Ting. Before I let you go, real quick, do you feel that the governor has been as communicative and understanding of the role of oversight that the legislature has? Do you think is he still sort of learning about that?
No, I think he's been very understanding. And in fact, his style has been very communicative. But to be fair to the governor, it's tough to communicate with all 40 senators and all 80 assembly members because every single one of us was impacted. And so I think the model that Dan described in terms of what Congress does makes a lot of sense. He has been in constant communication with our speaker, our pro tem, but I think we need to have probably a more formalized process where certain types of things get brought forward before they get announced, before they are done. I think that's the challenging situation, is you have this situation where we, most of us, were hearing about things in the press, and it really wasn't a process where that got, communicated in real time to certain people. And so I think that process just needs to be ironed out. Again, you're going through an emergency, you're creating these processes in real time. So it's not perfect. Everyone's doing the best they can. And I think now that we've had some time to reflect on it, I think we can say, hey, again, we're doing well, but we got to do better.
All right. Assemblyman Phil Ting from San Francisco. Assemblyman, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Scott. Really appreciate it. Take care.
Take care. All right, let's go to the phones. Again, the number is 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. And let's go to Caitlin in San Rafael. Welcome.
Hey, Scott, thanks for having me. I was just calling with some thoughts on Governor Newsom. I think that I've never been more proud to be a Californian, and he is shining in his leadership right now. Friends from other states are calling and saying that they're watching, and they wish they lived here, too. One thing that really has stood out to me is that he understands the great diversity of this state and is taking, county-by-county regional approach where he can. Some of the decisions, and also that this entire process has been led by science. Those are some of the things that really stand out to me in the way that Governor Newsom is handling this unprecedented crisis.
Yeah. All right. Well, certainly you're not alone. Caitlin, thanks very much for that comment. And, you know, Dan Schnur, the governor holds these regular press conferences. He's doing one today at noon. He was holding them daily for a while. And, you know, they often included at the beginning some kind of a little newsy tidbit announcement. And I remember a few weeks ago now, he announced that he was going to start a first-in-the-nation project with FEMA money and local restaurants to create meals that would be paid for by government money to deliver meals to seniors. And it sounded great. It's like, oh, it's a win for everybody. And I tweeted something out, and it got like an extraordinary amount of positive comments like Caitlin's, you know, like that's leadership. But, you know, in the follow-up, it hasn't worked that well. You know, for various reasons that I don't want to go into. But I'm wondering if you feel that he has used these powers in some ways, maybe, you know, he's gotten over his little bit over his skis in terms of, you know, saying what's being accomplished.
I guess I'd offer two perhaps contrasting thoughts on that, Scott. One is it relates to the Meals to Seniors program. Of course, you should compliment the governor for looking for smart and innovative ways to provide those kind of valuable services. The fact that the bureaucracy and the administration of that program didn't work out to the degree that he'd originally hoped is unfortunate. Hopefully it will going forward, but you can't blame him personally for laying out a groundwork for a program like that, even if it doesn't hit the road running immediately. Where I think this becomes more challenging for Newsom going forward, Scott, is on the broader question of reopening, particularly as different counties face different types of challenges. It appears to me that Newsom, after being very, very hard line on the original stay-at-home orders, once the beach protests started a few weeks ago, seemed to adopt a bend but don't break approach in trying to avoid confrontations, not only with local elected officials, but with citizens. Mm-hmm. I mean, a governor of California ordering the California Highway Patrol to arrest surfers is not a good look. And I think it was smart to avoid it. Mm. But particularly over the last week or so, and any number of health officials have talked about this with much greater authority than I have, as the pace of reopening has accelerated, I wonder if Governor Newsom, while still paying obviously very close attention to medical and health experts, is also beginning somewhat aware about the possibility of civic unrest if he doesn't find ways to loosen the reins. And the fact that the reopening might be going a little bit quicker than some of the experts say is him recognizing not just medical, but political and even human nature realities.
So in other words, he could be issuing stronger and stronger edicts, but people may just say, look, I've had enough. I'm going to the beach, or I'm going to get together with my friends, and then things kind of break down.
And what happens if you're a resident of Mendocino County or of Oceanside, California, and your mayor or county supervisor says, no, the governor's wrong? Who do you listen to? And if half of a community respects a stay-at-home order and half doesn't, then the virus spreads even more rapidly.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And Paula in Mill Valley, up in Marin, welcome.
Hi. My question is, I want to know, when is the assembly going to take action and act on ending the one-man rule of the governor?
Well, we just heard from Assemblyman Phil Ting. I mean, obviously, there has been some, I would say, pushback, unrest, maybe, on the part, especially the budget chairs, who are, of course, on a speed path now to pass a budget by June 15th without the usual weeks and weeks of hearings that we would have had. So I think you're seeing that, perhaps, especially since the Democrats really have run the table in the legislature. They don't want to be too critical of a governor of their own party. But, you know, in that regard, Dan, when you were with Republican Governor Wilson, the legislature, I think for most of those years, was led by Democrats. There might have been a week or two when it got away from Willie Brown when he was the speaker. But how did that that partisan dynamic play out at that time?
Well, I think what we heard from Phil Ting, I think very appropriately a few minutes ago, is that the need for balance of powers between a chief executive, either in Sacramento or in Washington, isn't a partisan matter. And the most forceful voices in calling out Governor Newsom have been fellow Democrats. And as we saw just yesterday, as the California State Senate weighs in on the governor's budget proposal, they're proposing a markedly different approach than he is. So to the questioner's point, watch the budget debate. And that's really where you're going to see the legislature reasserting its role as an equal player in governance. Yeah, as it relates back to the bygone days of the 1990s, while a Republican governor and Democratic legislature were often very fiercely at odds with each other, during times of emergency, that was much less the case. And I watched Governor Wilson and then Speaker Brown form actually a very strong working relationship across partisan lines when the state faced an ongoing series of natural disaster and economic challenges.
Yeah. Let me just quickly ask Paula, is there a specific thing or two or three that you feel the governor has overreached on?
Well, the BYD contract for the masks that haven't been certified is
That's
just
the
me.
Chinese company.
Unbelievable. Yep. And the newest thing in his budget where he's asking for $3 billion more for COVID-19, but he wants to have no oversight on that. And of course, the legislature is saying, wait a minute. You know, I mean, to me, I just think that the spending is just completely out of control. And I just feel he's doing things that, you know, are benefiting him personally.
Yeah. Okay, Paula, thanks so much. We're short on time, but, you know, Dan Schneider, you could also say in terms of the, you know, I would say the procurement has not been perfect. But on the other hand, there's been an absence of federal leadership. And so you've got states and counties and cities scrambling, and hospitals, for that matter, scrambling for the same PPE. So some of that is understandable.
I think that's right. What I would say, going back to our previous conversation, particularly on the protective equipment, is some kind of gang of eight in which the governor works with a smaller number of legislators, I think would satisfy, not entirely, but to a large degree, the concerns of Californians like Paula, who understand these decisions have to be made under duress, but having them made not just unilaterally, but by a cooperative effort from the governor and legislature when possible, is a good idea.
All right, Dan Schneider, sorry to cut you off there. We are out of time. Dan Schneider, professor at Annenberg School of Communications at USC and UC Berkeley, thanks so much. And thanks to Phil Ting as well. And thanks to all of you for listening as well. I'm Scott Schaefer.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.